Welcome to another episode of the Career Talks podcast. I'm your host, as always, Orlando Haynes. And each and every week, I have amazing guests with amazing information, actionable advice for your career and life. So super excited for tonight's guest. But make sure you subscribe to the channel on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube, Career Talks. And I appreciate your support. So if you've seen the flyer, I say this every time, we're going to talk about something pretty cool in the tech space, right? How to land a 200K, let me say that again, how to land a 200K job in tech. And I have just the young lady to do it. Her name is Prasha Dutra. And correct me if I mispronounce your name when you come on. She is the founder of Believe in Your Brilliance. And I'm super excited to have this conversation with her. Prasha, how are you?
I am good. How are you, Orlando? Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate you joining. And did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Awesome. Awesome. All right. So first, share with the folks a little bit about who you are, your business, et cetera.
Yeah, awesome. So hi, I'm Prasha Dutra. I'm a confidence coach, and I run a company called Believe in Your Brilliance, which is primarily about helping women in science, technology, and engineering careers become their most confident selves so that they can land 200K jobs, launch their businesses, do a lot of cool things, whatever they may wish to do, because that's the cool thing about confidence, that if you have confidence, then you could do literally anything you want. And so that's like literally what I do. I am a mother of a 15-month-old son, and I also have a TEDx talk. I've spent about 8 years in corporate America doing different jobs. And by education, I'm a chemical and a mechanical engineer.
Awesome.
So, yeah. Awesome. So I've done a bunch of things.
You said chemical and mechanical?
Yes, I did bachelor's in chemical and master's in mechanical engineering.
Awesome. Love it. So how did you get over into coaching? How did that transition happen with such a strong engineering background?
Yeah. So in 2017, I read this book called Lean In, which I think is a really popular book for women in STEM. Mm-hmm. And in that book, she was talking about how there are less women in STEM professions. And to me, that was really weird because I was in a team of all women engineers from around the world. And so I thought, what is she talking about? Like, my friends are engineers. My whole wedding party was engineers. Like, what is she talking about? And so that started me on a path of collecting stories of women in STEM to bring my experience to people, because I thought there was a lot of talk about no women in STEM. But then again, here I was with a very different reality. And I felt like, why are we talking about the gap? Why are we not talking about the people who are already here? Let's talk to them. Let's find out why they're here. And hopefully they'll help other people stay in STEM as well. And so that's how I started my podcast, Her STEM Story, in 2017. And I just kept building on it. And then 2020 came and thought, like, how do I monetize it? And it was a great time to monetize digital products and services. So kind of rode the 2020 wave. And at that time, I also got my TEDx. And then in 2021, with the rest of the rest of my generation, I quit my job during the Great Resignation and just started doing this full time, because the podcast was attracting a lot of great people who, women especially, who wanted the things that these guests had. And it just positioned me as somebody who might be able to help. And I was also surprised that I was able to help people with all these things that a lot of them I personally have never actually done. The suggestions I had in terms of confidence and also strategy were quite universal when it came to women in STEM.
Love that. Love that. So your journey, there was, and I asked this of folks who come out of corporate and go into career coaching, there was this epiphany that had to happen, right? Even though the pandemic hit, all those things. But what was the thing that said, okay, now I'm going to coach people? I've seen the gap in tech and women in tech and in STEM, et cetera. But what sparked you to be the person to now to say, I'm going to coach? Were people coming to you for advice, et cetera? So what was that pathway like?
Yeah, so a lot of people were coming to me for advice, and then I was very naturally good at that as well. I thought I was also reading a lot of books. I was doing a lot of other things, so it kind of gave me a little bit leverage in terms of like the knowledge I had that I could share. And then women were struggling to have mentorship. I mean, they still do in STEM professions, because there's not a lot of representation. Then there's not a lot of relatability, especially as you go up the ladder, there are less and less women. So I feel like they felt that they could come to me and talk to me because I was coming into their lives every week with new stories. So it kind of started with like people usually approaching me, but then it was more strategic in terms of like now, okay, now after talking to like 200 people, here's the product or service that I want to offer. And it has always been confidence. I like to call myself a confidence coach for that very reason, is because I feel like career coaching is a little bit more limited in terms of like what it helps you with. And so my coaching is a little bit more like career coaching, life coaching, like, you know, it kind of takes the form that my clientele might need and try to provide that for them, which looks a little bit different for different people at different stages of their life. But in the end, the benefits are usually seen in their career path. So that's how I coach. But I think I probably had a little natural inclination towards it. And I always say that I want to be a public speaker more and more because I do have the TEDx and everything. And it's kind of like, I sometimes think it's a bit like pit stop too, to doing more of that. But we all know that's a little bit of a different business model and different life altogether. So I haven't explored as much.
Exactly. I mean, it's part of the iteration, right? When you step into coaching to branch out to for multiple streams, et cetera, you'll do the coaching, you'll do a book or you do a speaking. And so you'll do live events. If not, you'll do, you know, you'll have a course or something. So there's all these steps that you naturally we go through to build that business. So you're definitely, you know, you got a TEDx talk. So that's a huge accomplishment. So congratulations to you on that. But when we talk about your STEM background, as I said, dual engineered, which is amazing. And you now transitioned into coaching, but specifically for women.
Yeah.
What is that? What's the percentage of women getting into STEM, or should I say currently in STEM, that you may know of? And what's the number of women being attracted to the STEM industry?
Yeah, so the gap is very huge. So there are only 28% women in STEM professions, and 40% of them actually quit within the first 5 years. And so the leaky pipeline, like they call it, is quite real. And I've been following the statistics for a long time now, I would say since 2017, probably since when it became relevant and people started tracking it around that time. And it hasn't changed much. I think we have gained only 4% in terms of like how many women are in STEM. And the loss has been, you know, not moved too much. Another problem is that only 82 women get promoted to the first level of first level of management for every 100 men. So then the gap continues to grow. And then at director level, there's even a bigger problem where for every woman who becomes a director, two women directors leave. And so it's like really weird that as we go up the chain, it's worse and worse and worse. So my whole like TEDx idea was also this, that there's a lot of focus on coding camps, a lot of focus on getting women in STEM. There's just tons of focus on that, right? But that's not solving the problem, because if you don't fix the pipeline, then you don't necessarily fix anything. Because yes, we can get a bunch of people and we can increase the percentage, but we can't retain them. And so that's kind of primarily even my expertise when I work with STEM women, is more so to support them in such a way that they choose to stay in STEM because they're able to grow and, you know, cut through some of these biases and are able to present themselves in such a way that it's not so that they don't become another statistics, because they're able to actually show up differently than their peers. So that's kind of the work I do with, and that's why I have done this with STEM women specifically, because I kind of went through the same thing for 8 years and, you know, found my way through that maze. So I think more so my focus is on like just retaining more women in STEM.
Got it. Understand. Definitely understand that. See, I'm a father of six girls. So,
oh wow.
Yep. So none of which are in STEM, but so anything that I can learn and you know, just learn from different women in different aspects and understanding where the pockets are, the struggles are. You know, I would love to turn around and give them that information too and see if it piques their interest. Yeah. But yeah, none of them in STEM. None of them are directed to STEM. So
That's fine. We need people in every profession. All professions are important. It's just because of my background that I've stuck to STEM more.
Yeah. Not a problem. So we have quite a few people watching. So if you want to say hello to Prasha and myself, let us know where you're watching from. Don't stay silent. Definitely engage with us. So Prasha, when it comes to landing, right, a 200K job in tech. Like, if you were to watch YouTube, there's so many people that say, you know, if you're in tech for about, or in a specific role, you should be jumping every 15 to 2 years to flip, you know, to almost double your salary. Is that reality? Is that really true? Or what's the pathway you look at to get to that number?
Yeah, so I think doubling salary every so many years could be a path and strategy for certain certain profiles, right? Like, this is very much dependent on your profile. This is also very much dependent on your interest as well. So the path that I was on in corporate, I would have never, probably not gotten to a 200K job for another 5 years because I was in a manufacturing path with the manufacturing profile. There are manufacturing roles that actually pay a lot of big bucks. I just wasn't in it. So I think one thing people need to understand about high paying roles is that they are highly specialized. They need a specific profile. And mostly that profile lies in either senior management, whether it's, you know, you can be whatever background engineering you have, senior management levels, plant managers and above for manufacturing, or even like higher level supervisors, and even executive levels. But then if you're looking at tech, then they can start at a little bit like 5 to 8 year mark where you could start to make that kind of money, even sooner in some cases, depending on how your profile is. So if you're in generative AI right now, you could make better salary within 3 to 5 years because generative AI is such a big booming space. So what I think people need to understand every single time is like there is a profile that qualifies for these kind of roles. And it's a very simple thing that you can do. You can actually go to any job search website, filter it by 200K and start to look at the roles that come up, right? And you can even put like the keyword for your industry or keyword for your current role and see what shows up. And that's going to open up your, opportunities that you may not be looking at, because a lot of us just search jobs by titles or industry, not by salary. So I feel like for a lot of my clients, it's an eye opener when they realize, wait, I qualify for a 300K job. I didn't even know, you know, so that's kind of what happens to women and minorities, because we don't necessarily even realize that we can actually make that kind of money. So a simple job back search of like salaries and your industry and even some keywords of your profile can give you a lot of opportunity in terms of, do I even have any roles in this number that I want to hit for my financial goals or for my personal goals? So I feel like that's one thing. But when we talk about, you know, job hopping or doubling your salary, I'm sure there are lots of ways of doing it. I personally have never worked with somebody to continuously double their salary year over year or even every 2 years. I have seen people double their salaries. And in my experience, that happens maybe 3 times in your career, maybe, where you can actually double or triple your salary. And again, if you're extremely talented, of course, you know, people will be after you. And you have to be in that specific high paying niche. So a few years ago, that niche was different, right? Like when a lot of money was going towards metaverse or like a lot of this virtual reality and a lot of these roles were opening up, we saw a lot of boom in TPM roles or PM roles because they were getting a lot of these program managers kind of people to do a lot of these jobs. Then suddenly they saw no money in it. They lost a lot of money. So they closed everything. And now you see that same trend in generative AI because now they're spending a lot of money in that space. So tech is volatile in that sense, has been since 2020. So can you double your salary every so often? Yes and no. Just depends on what profile you're in and what's your strategy. What's your move? What are you trying to accomplish? Because at the end of the day, every role, you have to justify why you're trying to do this. You know, and they're very, and the as you go up the ladder, your interviewers are listening very intently as to what your answers are, why you want this job. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it may be really easy to watch a YouTube video, but then to implement and execute could be another challenge that I'm not sure if it's even worth it. Right. Because is it just the money that you're going after?
Right.
Or there's more to life, especially in women. In the case of women, I know that there's more to their life. They want more. You know, we want more. We want balance. We want time with our kids. We want more flexibility. We want other things that are more important than maybe doubling our salary every so often. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but
no.
I think it's case by case.
You did. And it opened up several more follow-up questions. Yeah. So I'll start with the statistic you gave. with one woman getting promoted into director level two leave. So that's one step forward, two steps back in essence. So we're it's starting in a deficit. So to your point, you just said, is that due to women wanting more, or is it a cultural, do they feel that's the ceiling, or they're saying, hey, I want to now spend more time with my family because it's at this point I'm spending 70, 80 hours at work and et cetera. What are some areas that you found in the data that says two are leaving at when we're seven, when you're getting one up?
Yeah. So I think this comes from the McKinsey Workplace Report of 2022. And I don't necessarily remember exactly where the report took, like where, what were their, you know, reasonings for it. But I do think that corporate America in general is struggling with keeping women in leadership, keeping women after a certain stage. And I was actually, my last role in my with my employer was group deputy director for D&I. So I spent a very brief amount of time working a little bit closely in diversity, inclusion, and policies. And what put me off was more like these policies are not realistic in a lot of ways. And they are, again, somehow trying to tie the, they're very much focused on trying to tie the business with these numbers. And what that does is it really sometimes derails like the genuine efforts that need to go in. And as older the organization is, it's that difficult to turn it. Think of it like a giant ship that you want to turn around, and it's not going to turn around. It may sound pessimist, but I don't think that we're going to turn around these big cultures that are very much seeped with bias. And that's, it's not that it's bad. It's just who we are. We all have biases, right? And I don't know if we're doing enough to fight the bias. I think by creating D&I programs in a lot of ways, we might be increasing the bias, because now the person who's talking about D&I becomes the biggest problem, you know, because they're talking about all these things that people don't want to buy into. And this was the case that I faced every time I did anything related to D&I. So why they leave? Good question. I think a lot of people are probably betting a lot of money to figure out why. However, are we genuinely trying to figure out why? I'm not sure. I think it could be driven by a lot of the business needs that they need to just satisfy for the stakeholders and investors. You know, doesn't come from the best place. It seems like it, where there are no budgets, where there are no, you know, not a lot of support for the D&I departments. And at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter if you have D&I or not. I think feminine leadership is not accepted in corporate America. On top of it, feminine leadership is not even understood by women, because they have to become like men to grow in corporate. So there comes a point, I think, in probably every leader's life where they have to choose one over the other, because there's only so long you can go with being your unauthentic self. You know, there's only so long you can go with like trying to beat the system, you know, and there has to be a point of breaking where you're like, I just can't do this anymore. And what I'm noticing more and more in the last 5 years is that women are leaving corporate, very, very smart, very brilliant women are leaving corporate America to do their own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have numbers on it or stats on it, but I genuinely believe that women are going to leave and build their own ecosystem in STEM. Might look very different than what we have right now. Either it's starting their own organization, startups, companies. But we'll just have to build a culture from scratch, which is inclusive and diverse, because these companies are just very, very archaic. And everything runs too deep. You know, like when I started my podcast in 2017, it was five women in STEM, five women from different areas of from all over the world. And I have kind of kept up with all of them over the years. Mm-hmm. And they have all left corporate except for one, I think, who is kind of stayed. Everybody has either left, went into tech from manufacturing, left and went into tech, or went into environmental or some other like support functions, or just like me, women left and started doing their own businesses. So it's kind of like the reality, you know, that people are, women are just like not, they have to fight too much bias. And so the work I do is to sort of give them that playbook that if you use these rules, your life's going to be much easier in corporate, and you can actually keep growing as long as you want to grow without having to sacrifice your authenticity and without having to like play by their rules. You know, you can make your own rules. which then allows my clients to do, again, do more than 200K jobs, $500,000 jobs, be in C-suite, do a lot of big things that they want to do. So that's kind of my way of like trying to tackle the problem on an individual mm-hmm. level, because I, when I tried to do it on an organization level, it was extremely painful and it didn't feel like my fight to fight. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I love what you just opened up just now. So let's peel back that piece there on how your framework is helping women pretty much navigating corporate to exceed, I guess, in tech to exceed the, you know, to 200K plus income earning. Mm-hmm. I think that's a crucial point that you mentioned in all the information you as to why they're leaving, what you're mm-hmm. seeing out there. It hits home because I've recently heard some data too around that. So it's definitely interesting that this is happening across North America. Who knows? It may be across the globe, but
of course,
that's scary, right? That's scary to think that we're gonna go back to
a bunch of I feel like we are in that hamster wheel. Like I think we make a lot of progress, but then
cycle back
somewhere we lose it.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So let's talk about that for the women that are listening and who are watching now or hear it later. What is some of your frameworks to assist them in that? Because I'm sure that's a pressing thing right now.
Yeah. So I think first of all is I think for women, it's a very different a priority level. So like women mm-hmm. prioritize different things than men. And I think that's the first thing that I do with a lot of my clients. And it's always me first, then family, then work. And I feel like readjusting the priorities helps my clients understand what's important to them without feeling like they have to sacrifice all of these things to then be successful at work. Because when you are able to adjust the priorities, then you're able to then give work more more energy, but not from a place of sacrifice, but from a place of like, I want to do it because I'm taken care of, my family's taken care of, now I can do, you know, whatever I want to do. And I feel like that has helped a lot of my clients, especially as they go up the ladder where work is just, there's a lot more work than you would have at lower levels. Mm-hmm. And so that is definitely a key framework, is like you put yourself first, meaning you need to be in good shape. You need to be your best friend. You need to take care of all the needs that you have in terms of your mental health, your physical health, your nutritional health, whatever. Then family and then work. And it's true because a lot of very successful men also use the same approach where they don't think work is that important. You know, it is important, but is it that important? Right? But women, on the other hand, when they get obsessed with work, they can throw themselves at it and then they feel like that's where their identity lies. And so that's one big framework I teach right at the beginning of my program so that women can actually take care of themselves, take care of the people that they really care about. And now whatever's left over can go to work and can go to work from a place of like, I have extra to give, not like they're taking something away from me. Does that make sense? So that has been really, really, really helpful. The other frameworks that I really teach in the program are around communication skills to fight biases at work. So the biggest problem is that women are entering, and minorities in general, are entering the workplace with the deficit in terms of biases. So people are going to see you a certain way. People are going to judge you in a certain way. They're going to, it's just how it is, especially if you've decided to move from your country and, you know, do all these cool things. It's going to come with a level of bias. And one thing about bias is that you can fight it. And all you have to do for that is to be cognizant that people have it. Like you have it too, and they have it too. So I teach communication techniques around how to counter that bias. And sometimes it's simple as say what you want to say. Because if you try to hide it, then the bias is going to make it worse. So if you want to really ask for a promotion, then instead of working two times hard and let them figure out if they're going to give you a promotion or not, and like, you know, make this whole like really weird approach to like, I'm not going to say it, but they should know it, but I'm going to work harder and they will do it. And don't do any of that. Just be like, I want a promotion. How do I get it? Like, it's as simple as that. And the more you use the right words to express yourself, the more you can fight that bias, you know, that constantly you have to face every day. And a lot of people don't even know they have that bias. Like, they don't know that these people on the other side don't see you as super talented just because you're a woman of color. They just don't. So now you must wear a t-shirt that says, I'm really talented. Mm. And it has to be reinforced, right, again and again and again.
Wow.
Till they can't unhear it, right? And so that is a strategy that worked very well for me. And so that's what I teach, is like, say what you want, ask for what you want, reiterate your wins, reiterate your ask for support when you face challenges. Don't let anything else go into this black hole of like, they should just understand, because mm-hmm. they won't, because they have no point of reference. They may not have people like you in their family, which immediately makes you like a threat and an outsider. So you have to create bridges. You have to talk more. You have to share more. And you need the right language to be able to do it without sounding desperate or needy, or, again, reinforcing certain biases that people might already have for you. Right. And that's very important.
You are unpacking some key sensitive people. I'm sure some folks that are watching are like, wow, did she just say that? But it's true. These are the conversations that should have, that should be had and be in a safe space in corporate, but typically are not. Like, you're hitting on every single nail. So that's really good. But mm-hmm. the communication piece you said on bias, on how to fight, I mm-hmm. think that's where it's a struggle for possibly mm-hmm. people of color, because yeah. we come in with a deficit, and you're saying that we already have to fight to prove our worth twice as hard, or whatever we yeah. have to do. And but then now there's the communication yeah. piece.
And I feel like it's a 50-50, right? So yeah. I feel like a lot of us are trying to overdo the work without the communication.
Right.
And that's burning us out. That's kicking us out of the race. That's like costing us more effort and energy. But if we are able to sort of 50-50 it, where there's 50% of like communication and branding and 50% of like the amazing work that you already do, then you will find that you can move through some of these challenges much faster mm-hmm. and people will know you for what you want them to know you for, versus their assumptions of what you are or who you are.
Here's the other piece I want to throw at you. So there's, on the communication side, right, there's the emotional intelligence, knowing how to communicate that without yeah. coming off the angry blah, blah, blah person.
It's very critical.
So I think that's a huge piece too, because yes, as people of color, we immediately come on guard when we're challenged. We're like, whoa, okay, wait a minute now. I got to breathe through this before I respond. I got to think before yeah. I respond.
And that's why I teach, like, one of the things I teach in my communication stuff is that kind of imagining an armor around you, which mm-hmm. is like a filter, which is the filter for what am I making this mean about me, right? And so if you sort of filter everything through it and not let anything mean anything about you, then you can genuinely enter a conversation where you can fight the bias versus reinforcing the bias. Because when somebody calls you out on something, and mm-hmm. immediately that hits a nerve and you're like sensitive to it and you suddenly feel it on your body and you're like, now making this mean something about you. What happened in that situation is that you just lost. And their bias has been confirmed, and you're going to respond exactly how they think you're going to respond. And so the best way to fight it would be, I don't make this mean anything about me, and I can still respond. Mm-hmm. Like, if I wasn't a woman of color, if I wasn't this, if I wasn't that, and this didn't mean anything, then how would I respond to it? And then how would I respond to it? Like, and I'm going to maybe sound not right in this moment, but I will still say it. But how will I always tell women, I'm like, well, how will Chad respond to it? Mm-hmm, right? mm-hmm. And the thing is, my husband is white. So he's Italian. So, but the thing is that there's something to learn there, because Chad will not make this mean anything about him. And he's probably going to be fine confidently communicating whatever it is that he wants to communicate. And so I feel like sometimes if you have that kind of a little bit of a filter, it's going to help you. It's going to make you sound confident. It's going to make you sound less emotionally charged. Mm-hmm. It's going to help you, again, fight that bias that's coming at you, because they're expecting you to do that. Right? Like, that's what they're expecting. And the minute you don't confirm the bias, I feel like you become really interesting.
Yeah.
because you didn't confirm. And now you're like, now they're like always paying attention. And when I say they, I mean anybody that does mm-hmm. not look like you. Like that could be men, that could be men of color, that could be men, that could be women of color, that could be anybody who doesn't necessarily look like you. And so what I found is that if you are able to come back with something they were not expecting from you, and you're able to build on it consistently, then a lot of times people start to lean in and they start getting interested because now you're challenging the status quo and you're responding in a very different way. Mm-hmm. And that's refreshing. I think that's refreshing for a lot of people. Because I've worked in small towns in Texas. I've also worked in small towns in Pennsylvania. And I have seen all kinds of people. And one of the best ways I've kind of fought a lot of bias and even sometimes comments is just by bridging the gap and giving them something they were not expecting, or meeting them with a lot of empathy when they were expecting me to blow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said earlier about having the proper language. And I share sometimes when I talk to groups is that the higher you go in your career, the language does change, right? How you communicate, what the deliverables are. It's different speaking to a peer, to a manager, to a director, to a VP, right? It's a condensed version. The higher you go, they just want, give me the sound bites, what's happening. So as someone navigating through that, and for folks, anyone who's just joining, these are frameworks that Prosher is sharing on how to increase your salary. And so if you're wondering, what does that have to do with $200,000, right?
Everything. It's got to
everything. Trust me. We've been in corporate long enough. Everything, yes. For sure. Yeah. So just to add, you said priority, right? Prioritizing life. Number one, yourself, family, mm-hmm. work. Number two was communication on bias, which is huge. There's so much to unpack there. But what would be three? What would be four in terms of your framework?
Absolutely. And so then I have a 200K framework, which is usually like this. In fact, one of my clients today told me that the concept is mind blowing. So I'm just going to paraphrase her. But one of the big concepts that I teach inside the program, especially for high paying roles, and especially if you're a minority, you're probably coming in with a lot of limiting beliefs. You're coming in with a lot of I don't deserve this. It's going to be really hard. I need to work very hard, or, I'm not smart enough. A lot of people literally look at one job, one thing in the job description, they say, I'm not ready for it. Or a lot of us are lying to ourselves when we're saying, I need to prepare, and I need to prepare, and I need to prepare, and then I never prepare. 3 years later, I've still not applied to that job. And so one of the big things I teach inside the 200K framework is action times belief is equal to results. So meaning you're so focused on action, but your belief is zero. And that's why it doesn't even matter how much action you're going to take, you will not get the 200K job. So or any job for that matter. And so if you're going to take these leaps, which in a lot of cases for my clients are at least 30 to 50% leap in their salary, you're going to have to strategize and work with belief, because there's not enough action in the world that you can take that can suddenly change your life. It is always that component of belief that is the coefficient that's going to it's a catalyst, right? It's going to change how fast you can do it. So it's not only about getting that 200K job, it's about getting it fast. And it's that belief in yourself and in your abilities that if you can maximize on that, then even small action would work. So for example, some of my clients who've gotten 200K jobs or $500,000 jobs, they didn't even apply to the jobs. It wasn't even about application. It was either an opportunity that showed up, or they just spoke to an ex-colleague and they had a role. And we've all heard those stories where people got jobs without applying. And a lot of times it's the confidence that they have in themselves, is that belief that, I deserve it, and I can ask for it, and I can go for it, and I'm not going to delay it, and I'm not going to say no, and I'm not going to say I'm not ready. I'm actually just going to go and do the interview. And I feel like so many talented people are just not able to overcome these limiting beliefs. So I always tell people that if you start on a goal like this, ask yourself, do I really believe that I deserve it? If the answer is yes, how much? What's the percentage? Right? Do you believe it in 10%, 20%, 40%? Or you believe it in 0%? If it's 0%, then don't take any action. Any action would be a waste of your resources. Focus on what do I need to believe that I actually deserve it, And once you can get your belief at least 10-20%, then you can put some action behind it to then increase the belief as, you know, as you get more data or evidence or as you start applying. So I feel like it's a combination of the two, and very few people think of it that way. Because unless you have belief in yourself, you cannot cross any interview threshold. Like, you will not get it. Yes. Because interview is just like sales. I think Alex Hormozi says it, right? It's like transfer of conviction. I believe in something. I believe I'm the right fit. I just want you to believe it. But unless I believe it, you cannot put that responsibility on the interviewer to make you believe that you deserve the job. So I feel like in some of these higher paying roles and higher jobs, when you're doubling your salary, moving up the ladder, it is more and more about your mindset and your belief system than it is about, do you know this language and that language? And, you know, do you know this particular skill? You know, because now it's not skill-based job. It's past skills. It's past that, you know, just limited number of knowledge and hard skills. It's coming into soft skill category. You're going to be working with other people. You're going to be demonstrating your confidence every single day. And so they're looking for these people. And unless you have belief in yourself, there's not a magical resume that's going to get you a 200K job. Like, that's not how it works. So both have to be balanced, and they both have to be in the right direction. And then things will happen much faster and much more in an alignment, if that makes sense.
It does. Those are some good tools and takeaways for folks to think about. Like, if they're in that process now, wondering, do they believe if they can achieve the next level, whatever that is for them in their career, and wondering why. And then they circle back and be like, wow, it's because I don't believe I'm worthy of it. And so therefore my act, and that'll affect your actions almost to take in action. Right. Absolutely. So no action is action. And it'll affect it. It'll start to, it'll start to wearing you like a coat, like what's going on. Right. So that can affect you big time. So let me ask you something you said earlier about the 3 to 5 years. Someone in the right profile can earn, you know, that 200K. Talk to us about what that right profile is what you see in the market today. And what would be some first actionable steps? Like, if someone was a teacher,
yeah,
like, I got to get out of teaching, I need to earn some more income, even if it was income driven, right? But they have a strong belief, and it's like, I see tech as an option. What would be some steps and right pathway to put them on?
Right. So I personally haven't helped a lot of people transition from certain professions into tech. I have usually worked with seasoned tech professionals who have bachelor's and master's degree, and who have been like, who have started their careers in this space as well. But I know for a fact that a lot of companies have coding programs, have a lot of like support in terms of like, if you're trying to test some of these things for yourself, you can start there, join the program. I think Google does something like that too. But if you wanted to get on the tech path, there are many, many options. There's a route of cybersecurity that's really booming right now, so you can go that route. But to build any career takes about 5 to 10 years. Like, there's no other way. Right? Like, there's just no other way to it. It's a skill set. And the profiles that usually make this kind of money are either in product management, they are data scientists, generative AI scientists, or engineers who are working in artificial intelligence. Then there are also software developers or staff software engineers, people who have grown, who have gone up the ladder in software engineering itself, in the technical ladder. Then, of course, you have the technical program managers, which is where after a certain amount of time in a specific technology, you are going and supporting bigger programs as a technical program manager. That can be different for different companies, from what I understand, that TPMs can do many different jobs. But those are some profiles that actually make over $200,000. And depending on the industry, and it's mostly tech. And then on top of it, a lot of times it's in the higher paying geographical regions like California, as well as there are some of these roles in New York area as well, where they do pay in those ranges over 200K. Again, it does not have to be the base package. A lot of times it is a combination of your base salary plus bonuses plus compensation. And when we're talking about compensation for some big companies, it ranges from, it is usually their stocks and bonus options, right? So I think some people also have a, they think it's 200K base. Yes, there is, there are roles with 200K base. But again, it's product management, people with a lot of experience in a specific technology, doing a specific thing for a while, and then growing in that same path. Or it is people who are transitioning from a technical path to some sort of PM path of like program management, or, you know, trying to go into leadership roles or engineering managers. You know, these are the people who would make this kind of salary. But again, as unique your skill set is, or as unique your expertise is in a certain tech stack, more likely you're to get more salary for it, because it just makes you more unique.
What are you seeing in terms of the tech space opportunities versus enough skill talent, enough talented people to match those jobs? Are you seeing more jobs than we have talented people, or is it vice versa? Any pulse on that at all?
Yeah, so I work, so I have a high touch point program, meaning I do work very closely with my clients. So I only work with a handful of clients. I don't work with like a bigger group of clients, if you will, like hundreds of clients. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to make that comparison. However, jobs are coming back. People are getting more opportunities. I have a client right now who has two offers, and it's common. It's actually coming back where people are securing multiple offers. That happened to one of my clients in January as well, where she secured close to 300K salary and she had about two offers. So a lot of people, I think it's getting better. Because I've seen the industry from 2020, I'm sure you must have too, 2020, 2021, 2022. Yeah. It's been very different. Every quarter is different. I feel like that's the reason why career coaching is a good investment right now for anybody looking for better salaries and jobs, because every quarter the industry shifts, something happens, because these people are making business decisions based on the last quarter and everybody's just trying to avoid a big recession. So if their results are not good, suddenly all the jobs go out. If their results are good, suddenly there are more jobs in the market. So the strategies are not the same for every quarter, is what my experience has been. And the openings are also not very consistent, since everything is up, so up and down still. But it is better. I think it's better Q1 than it was Q4. So it's a little bit better in terms of like how many options are there to apply to. And I think the talent is equally saturated because they laid off so many people.
Oh, yep.
So you are definitely competing with the best minds in the world. But that's the nature. I think that's the name of the game in tech, right? Like, to get software engineering in a college, you had to be the top of top.
Yeah.
Right. And then to then get jobs out of that, you have to be again top of top. And so then now it's just more thinner and thinner and more dense as you go up, because the talent is just extremely highly talented people. Yep.
In a exactly. lot
of companies.
Exactly. Yeah. To your point, the folks that are at the top necessarily don't need to interview, right? It's a conversation behind closed doors, separate. Next thing you know, boom, they're, you know, senior director, VP, CIO, CT, whatever it is, of an organization, you know, moving senior manager, just because their work is that good and it spreads, right? Just based on their performance. So as we look, time is running by.
Yes.
What any additional frameworks that you can speak to? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm a recap for anyone who's just joining. Prioritizing, right? Prioritizing your life. You said this is, we're seeing that more for women, in why they may be a larger exit to that, and them leaving corporate. Two is communication and bias. Folks, if you missed that segment, you're going to want to, because that piece of the conversation was powerful. All of it was, but that is so crucial in today's, what I like to call career economy.
Yeah.
And then action times belief equals results. You need to tap into all those sessions there, or should I say conversations that we had on that. But what would be your fourth, this one that they can take away before we close out?
Yeah. So I think my other very cool thing that I teach my clients is to interview as soon as you start applying. I think a lot of people interview, apply, and then they interview prep later. So I think interview preparation in alignment with application is very important, so that you don't end up panic applying, you don't end up with a lot of job you know, like a lot of data that I have gotten no results for, and now you have lost sight. And some people come on my calls, like my clarity calls, and they tell me, I've applied to thousands of jobs and I didn't get a job. And I'm like, but why are you applying to thousands of jobs? like I feel like they did not understand the assignment. They think the assignment is to apply to as many jobs as possible when the assignment is to get one job. So I feel like that recalibration of your mind in terms of what are you trying to do? Why are you doing it? And I'm like, if you tell me you've applied to 1,000 jobs and didn't get a job, if I had a job, I would not give you a job, because clearly you don't think properly. Like, you're thinking, your cognitive skills are like all over the place. You're not thinking properly. So it's like, it's important to recognize, and your brain loves, it understands activity, takes it seriously. So when you, let's say, apply in the morning and spend an hour at night to interview prep. So that prepares your body, mind, and everything to anticipate an interview, to be like, keep your eyes on the prize that I need to interview. That's why I'm doing all of this. But somehow people get obsessed with this thousands of applications, and it always like irks me. And then they don't record anything. They have no data. They can't tell me the jobs they've applied to. And I'm like, what makes you think you're an engineer that can work at Google? You're not even tracking your simple job search. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you a data engineer when you don't track basic data, right? Like, it's weird that people don't like connect their professions to some of these goals that they're going for. So I always teach my clients to have a very set time boxed schedule of like apply in the morning, network in the afternoon, and interview prep at night. And if you do this on a consistent basis, even if it's 1 hour a day for 3 weeks, you're more likely to secure something fast, rather than doing it in like an assembly line fashion of like, I'll just apply to a bunch of jobs and then I'll wait and then nothing happens. And then you'll do it again and nothing happens. And it's like, you're wasting so much time. And then if, God forbid, a recruiter reaches out, you're like, I'm not prepared. And then you lose out on the 2 interviews you got after thousands of jobs. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. You must secure every interview that you get, especially if the response rates are so low. I think it's like 2-3%. It's very, very low. So your interview prep has to be like the best. And I feel like people are not prioritizing it, and for that reason, losing a lot of great opportunities. So that would be my final framework for everybody.
I love that, because that's being more proactive than what we're seeing is reactive. And by then they're in apply mode, not in interview, sell their skills, talking about their best, you know, assets and attributes. And so it's a crash and burn back to the drawing board again. Exactly. Love that. He said, while you're applying for a data role, you can't track basic data.
It's just crazy. Like, it's so crazy. It's so crazy. To me, that's my biggest pet peeve. And I have not met one person yet who can show me a nice job tracker with all their jobs. Just not yet. I have not come across anyone yet who's very good at it.
Here's a quick question before we close out, because you said tracking multiple jobs. What do you say to folks who customize multiple resumes?
Yeah.
What's your feedback on that?
I think you need one resume per role type. So product manager, technical program manager, okay, one resume, so that you're only showcasing the work that relates to those jobs. You don't need to showcase everything. So you could just, one analogy I give is like, your resume should not look like Cheesecake Factory menu. Like, it shouldn't, right? And it should look like McDonald's. It should be 1, 2, and 3. And I should be able to pick and say, this is what I want in the next person. So that way you can have a one page resume. But then when you're modifying for each role, it's just about word density, meaning, again, maybe you're saying something differently than how the job description talks about it. So right now, like, ChatGPT is a great way of saying, give me the 5-10 best keywords, and then you can just increase the density of the keywords, so that if something is called program and you wrote project, it makes sure that you're saying the same things, you know, if you mean the same things. Not that you're going to lie, but if you meant the same thing as what they're saying, you can do some increase in words density, in keyword density. But honestly, nobody should spend, and this is just my 2 cents, nobody should spend more than an hour making a nice application for something, especially if it's one of your dream jobs, because you're wasting too much time And again, you forget, why are you doing this? You're doing this to get a job, not to get through ATS. And if you don't get through ATS, it's fine, because you don't even know if everybody uses ATS on its full capacity. So again, don't lose context, don't lose sight, apply, do your best ability, time box it, and then move on to the next one, because it is the quality of application, but it is also quantity. So you kind of have to balance the two as you go through this process. But if you're spending 1 hour applying, like 2 hours applying for one job, or 1 day applying for one job, then again, it's not a good strategy. You could be using that time for so many other things. And the resume is supposed to be, you need to do a lot of heavy lifting on the front end of the resume when you're selecting the right projects and bullet points. So that work can take up to 2-3 weeks. So take your time. Go through each bullet. Be like, okay, does this really position me as a program manager? Does it say all the things I've done that are required for program management? If you don't know what program management is, speak to people, talk to them, get their input into what I need to put in here. And then that once it's done, then there's no need to change it all the time, you know, on like a big scale. It's just about some words that you can move around, and that's it. Like, don't overdo it, because again, then you'll just waste your time.
I love it. Love it, love it. Last question.
Yes.
Why do you do what you do?
I help women believe in their brilliance because I was born to do it.
Look, that's it. We're going to close it out like that. I appreciate your process for your time, your expertise, your transparency. And I think you hit some people between the eyes. Yeah. Folks, you definitely want to circle back on this episode. Prasha shared some amazing information that I think all job seekers in all disciplines need to understand a certain framework on how to, you know, succeed and secure better opportunities for themselves. So, again, I appreciate you so much. Folks, don't forget to subscribe, and we will see you next week.
Bye. Thank you.